Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are honored to be with Anthony Lewis. Bill Russell?
Well, it's part of that informing, and this, and we really haven't talked as much about it, is the discussions within the public that, you know, is partly mediated by the media. There are certain leadership functions that can devolve to political leaders, but ultimately a lot of this is about the ability of you and me to have a discussion and to disagree, to learn from one another. And that, as much as anything, is what this is about, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Of course, most people might not be too comfortable with the idea that they have to learn from your opposing view, but that's why we have a Constitution.
Well, and that's why you call it a biography of the First Amendment, for the thought that we hate. It is that thought we hate that is the real challenge in this. The rest of it's pretty easy.
Holmes's phrase, freedom for the thought that we hate, comes from the 1929 case, and I might just say what that was about. A woman named Rosika Schwimmer, who was an immigrant from Hungary, wanted to become an American citizen. She was not allowed to take the oath because she was a pacifist, and she would not swear, as she was required to, that she would take up arms in defense of the Constitution. Well, as Holmes said in his dissenting opinion when she lost in the Supreme Court, she wasn't likely to be asked to take up arms in defense of the Constitution because she was a woman and of a certain age, as he put it very ungallantly.
Well, actually, it's quite gallant. He didn't say she was old.
And he said he didn't agree with her pacifist views. He knew that war was terrible, and as we discussed earlier, he knew plenty about the terrors of war. But he also thought it had a noble character, and he didn't agree with her. But he said, if there is any provision of the Constitution that more forcefully requires our attachment than any other, it is freedom of thought. Not free thought for those who agree with us, but freedom for the thought that we hate.
And this was in a dissenting opinion.
Yes,
I think that's
right.
Where I wanted to go is these dissenting opinions seem to be in some ways at least as important as the majority opinions. There's a longevity to this.
Well, that's so, but not always so. Sometimes people dissent and history just swallows them up. Those who tried to preserve racial segregation, their dissents have bitten the dust. But in the case of Holmes and Brandeis, as I've said earlier, their opinions in favor of free speech at a time when there was a lot of repression eventually persuaded the country and the court. And that those are dissenting opinions that really mattered.
I have a friend who quite cynically said, you know, there's all this talk about judges, especially the Supreme Court judges, who are treated as if they, in this case he said royalty. He said they're just politicians in dresses. I said, the Supreme Court justices? And he said, well, think about it. They reflect the opinion. So I bring it to you. Are the Supreme Court justices politicians in dresses?
That's always a possibility. At their best, they're certainly not. I think most judges try faithfully, on the Supreme Court or off, to try to find some more profound basis for their decisions than politics. They all have instincts. They are what Justice Holmes called can't helps, things you're born with or grew up with. And you can see it on the present court, where there are four members who have deeply conservative instincts. And they're not consciously, I don't believe, trying to do a political thing, but that's just the way they think. That's what they believe is the system. And others have a different view. It's not always as political in its consequences as it is today, where you have a sharply divided court and it looks as though they're just voting A or B. It's not usually that simple. Judges really do try to find deeper reasons for what they decide.
And some of the importance of this, the discussions that motivated the First Amendment, is to get past the naive institutional view that a Supreme Court justice is A or B. They are human beings, as is the president, as is a member of Congress, as are all of us. And somewhere in there, in your book, maybe several times, you talk about maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that part of the challenge as a political entity in this country is to mature, to grow up, to become more sophisticated, to learn, both as individuals but also as a people.
How true, as Lincoln grew and deepened under the stresses of war. Or Holmes, for example. Holmes did not come on the court as a great advocate of free speech and freedom of the press. He was, for years, just an unthinking, I mean, he always thought, but he didn't express himself in any different way, member of the group that didn't think free speech was a fundamental value, and he just approved, stamped okay on many repressive actions. Then in 1919, in a mysterious process of which we know something but not everything, we'll never know everything, he changed his mind. And that was a sign of the ability to grow, to mature. And he wrote this astonishing dissent and followed up with many more dissents with passion and eloquence. And that's what you want in a judge, somebody who can grow up.
You've spent your life in the press. You've been admired and honored on many, many levels for that. And clearly the First Amendment to you is one of those central fundamental values, to use your word. What are the others, or at least some of the others? If the freedom of thought and speech is one of them, what could possibly compete with that?
You mean in the Constitution?
Yeah.
Oh, there are many things. And right now, let's take it right now. The leading case before the Supreme Court on civil liberties has to do with the men being held at Guantanamo. They've been there for 3, 4, 5 years. They're held under rather difficult circumstances.
Some for 8.
Yes. And they have not had any chance to go before what we would regard as a fair process in which they get a chance to challenge the, even told the reasons why they're being held, or get a fair chance to challenge them. Well, that's what we would call, and the Constitution calls in shorthand, due process of law.
That's fundamental.
To me, that's just as fundamental as free speech. It does my heart no good when I see what is done in the name of power.
And in the name of us.
And in the name of us.
But this ultimately, I mean, the bottom line is this is a sense of justice and a sense of legitimacy. I mean, that's what this Constitution is all about.
Oh, how well I like that. What a good phrase, a sense of justice and the sense of legitimacy. I so agree with that.
Well, let us go away so that we can have a couple more minutes when we return with Anthony Lewis. Our great pleasure to be in his presence. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, please be with us. We'll be right back.